But I do want to recognize the students and their willingness to kind of step out and do something with us. I mean, what you've seen some of the students do today is probably a little bit beyond average. And even in this message today, we get to hear from another student as well. And it's so fun to hear the way that God is at work in their lives. And it's so fun to be in this room with all of you. Just the fun energy of us all being together. And so thank you for taking that step with us this summer as we've all jumped into one service together. Okay, so I was looking at this the other day. I thought this was something they were still planning, but it turns out they've been doing this since 2001. Did you know that they are actually, you're able to, if you want to, visit outer space? Like, there's agencies that are already doing it. They've been doing it since 2001. Now, the original, like, the first people to do it had to pay $2 million a pop, $200 million a pop to do it. And so there's some barriers between me and outer space, right? It used to be that you had to, you know, get like a big degree and stuff like that, and you had to go through a lot of training regimens to become an astronaut. It was a highly competitive process. Now, if you have enough money, you can do it. But either way, I can't do that. But even if I had unlimited sources of money, you actually couldn't pay me enough to do it. I just do not want to leave. I like having my feet on the ground. Right here, I like them where they are. I don't even like airplanes very much, to my wife's chagrin. So, you know, one of the things that's difficult about space is even though we have the ability to access it and it's right there, what it would require of me to get up there is more than I'm prepared to pay, financially or even just emotionally. It's too much. I've had conversations with people over the years who have talked about wanting to explore Christianity or explore faith in God, but one of the concerns they had was what that was going to require of them. What that was going to mean for them, how they'd have to change their life in order to jump into this whole religion thing. And sometimes those requirements seemed too stringent. They were too much of a barrier to step foot into a church and to explore faith in God. And so one of the questions I think that's really important for all of us to reckon with is this: what does God require of us? What does God require of us? I think you'll see if you explore the Old and New Testament, you'll get some answers to that. But I want us to hold that question there a little bit today. What does God require of us? Even as we're all together for this Power of One series, for last week and the next couple weeks, we're going to be talking about the names of God, the ways that people talked about God in the Old and New Testament. So last week, Dave talked about Abba, Father. That was a name for God that we see in the New Testament. And we see used even in the Old Testament in some ways too. But today we're going to use one that actually does have its root in the Hebrew language, and so as a result, it's a little bit different. We don't use this language all the time. But today we're going to talk about Jehovah Jireh. And Jehovah Jireh means this: the Lord will provide. Now, if you've ever seen this word Jehovah up there before, and you wonder how we got it, there's a name for God that shows up in the Old Testament a lot. Sometimes we refer to it as Yahweh. And that's probably a more faithful way to pronounce the Hebrew. But over the years, as different languages have grabbed hold of this, some of the yuhs become juhs, and some of the vowels changes, and suddenly Yahweh becomes Jehovah. And so I don't care which one you use. You can use Yahweh or Jehovah to your heart's content. It doesn't matter to me. But today we're going to use Jehovah. And we're going to talk about this idea of Jehovah Jireh, the Lord will provide, a name used to describe something theologically significant about who God is. And to do that, we're going to use the story of Genesis chapter 22. So if you brought your Bibles with you or they're there in the pew in front of you, turn to Genesis chapter 22. But the text will also be on screen as we go. I want to talk about this story. It's a pretty familiar one to a lot of us, but if you haven't heard of it, it's referred to as the binding of Isaac. And this is the story of when Abraham was called to sacrifice his son, Isaac. And it begins like this. Sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, "Abraham." "Here I am," he replied. Then God said, "Take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain I will show you." So that was the instruction. God was going to have to sacrifice, or Abraham was going to have to sacrifice Isaac. He was going to have to go to this mountain that God would specify, and there he would sacrifice the son that he loved. If you jump back into the verses there, you see this. Take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac. And I want to dwell on this a little bit. If you don't know anything about Abraham's story, I'm going to fill you in just a couple important details. God had made Abraham a promise. He had told Abraham that he was going to become the father of many, as in he was going to become the great-grandfather of a large generation of people, a giant kingdom, if you will. And in that process, Abraham had been following God, trying to stay faithful to what God had asked of him, but had always had this promise. Now, in order to, of course, be the father of many, he would have to have a son. And yet, even in his old age, that took a long time, and there was a windy road to get to this point. But finally, Abraham was given his son Isaac. And Isaac, as Abraham would understand it, was the key to that promise. It was going to be through Isaac that this promise would be fulfilled. And so God asking Abraham to sacrifice Isaac is in many ways the same way, in Abraham's mind anyway, of saying this whole promise thing, it's null and void. I need you to sacrifice it. But even if he could get his mind around God kind of reneging on his promise, there was something more, something every parent in this room knows. No kingdom, no treasure on this earth can compare to the love of a child. And Isaac was a son he loved. So this command from God to sacrifice his son, who represents all of God's promise, a son whom Abraham loves, is not light. It's really heavy. But you need to know something else about Abraham. He didn't have the advantage of this. And what I mean by that is this. God called Abraham, with Abraham having very little information about who this God was. God calls Abraham and says, I want you to go to land that I will show you. And Abraham says, okay, if I'm going to hear an interesting divine voice, I guess I'll follow it. But he doesn't know anything about the actual character of God yet. How could he? He didn't know this God. And much of Abraham's journey isn't just about his faith, but it's about Abraham coming to terms with who God actually is. Because here's the thing, all of the other gods and all of the other villages and tribes and lands, they had their own ways of doing things. And it was not entirely uncommon for a god to ask a village to sacrifice their children. Actually, that was pretty common. And so now for this God to show up and say, I need you to sacrifice your son. While it stings our ears today, for Abraham, it was just sort of par course. Gods do this. They take. They require things from us. And so I have to be faithful to this God. He's gotten me this far. But man, when gods require things from us, that's hard. And so Abraham sets out on this journey to figure out what it means to follow God. Now, he is a man of faith. In Hebrews, it's going to talk about Abraham thinking through probably all these possibilities, deciding that maybe God could even raise Isaac from the dead if he had to. But here's the thing. God does not know what, Abraham does not know what God's provision is going to be like in his life. He knows what he's been called to do, but he does not know the outcome. All he can do is follow this God and hope this God is good. So we're going to skip ahead a couple of verses in verse 6. This is what happens. Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. And the two of them went on together. Isaac spoke up and said to his father Abraham, Father? Yes, my son, Abraham replied. The fire and wood are here, Isaac said, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham answered, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. And the two of them went on together. I think the author of this passage was, in fact, trying to play with our hearts a little bit. To have Isaac be the one to ask, where is the lamb for the offering? When he himself is that lamb? Oh, that hurts. And it had to hurt Abraham. This is the son he loves. Sons are precious. Children are precious. And we don't want to sacrifice them. But there's this God who's requiring it of me. And so what do I do? And as we experience that whole weight of what's happening, we do see this. Abraham throws in this line, God will provide the lamb. But once again, what we know is that Abraham doesn't know what this provision is going to look like. How? In what way? Did God believe there would be a substitute? Did Abraham believe there would be a substitute for Isaac? It's possible that he believed that. Or he believed that the son right in front of him really was the lamb to be sacrificed. We don't know. Abraham can't know yet. What we do know for sure is that Abraham had every intention of actually carrying out the deed. He fully meant to do this, completely. And here's how we know that. It's the next verses. Here's what it says. When they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. I once heard of a missionary who was preaching through the entire book of Genesis to a group of people who had never heard it before. And he had been going through the entire story, and he got to this point, and he stopped and left town for 2 weeks. Because you've got to sit with the weight of what's happening. Abraham has the knife. And he's ready. And his son is there on an altar. I don't know what configuration this altar took. I don't know how the wood was arranged. All I know is that Isaac is now bound to this wood, and that's why we call this the binding of Isaac. And Abraham is ready to do this horrible thing that none of us can get our minds around. The good news for you is I'm not the missionary departing for 2 weeks, and so here's what happens in verse 11. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham!" "Here I am," he replied. "Do not lay a hand on the boy," he said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your only son." And in verse 13, Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the place, "The Lord will provide." And to this day it is said, "On the mountain of the Lord it will be provided." And there in our English, we say that this place is called "The Lord will provide," because in Hebrew, it's actually just two words they could kind of shove together. Because in Hebrew, names meant something. When you got a name, it had very important meaning. And so with Abraham taking the name of God and combining it with the idea of provision, he was saying something about who God is at a fundamental level. Fundamentally, God provides. Now actually, if you kind of look at the Hebrew, the word there where we translate it provides is a little bit different. It's actually sort of like God sees it, or we might translate it as God will see to it. Maybe you've used that in your own language at some point. When you see to something, you're going to make sure that it happens. You might not personally handle each and every one of the details, but you're going to make sure that each detail is covered. And we serve a God who will see to it. When there's a promise that is made, it's God who's going to see to the details. And even when things are really difficult, even when the future's unclear and the how is unclear, it's God who's providing the details. And that is why this is a God who provides. God doesn't want us to sacrifice children. And that seems obvious to us, but for Abraham, this was new information. I don't serve a God who sacrifices children. In fact, I serve a God who provides. A God who gives what is needed to make it through. To see everything to completion. That's the God I serve. And so on that day, Abraham immortalizes Jehovah Jireh, as we would say now, the God who provides. And this is important to us because when we have this question of what does God require of us, when we look throughout the Old Testament and the New, we do see things that God asks. There's a sacrificial system in the Old Testament, not of children, but of animals. There's also this idea that ultimately we are to live different kinds of lives. Micah 6:8, right? What's required of us is how we respond to the people around us, is what we see. And these are things that God requires, but he requires the things that are for our own benefit. See, when we choose to enter life with other people well and follow God's commands, it makes our lives and the lives of the people around us better. And even when we give something in sacrifice, just like they did, that sacrifice was meant to remind them that it was God who provided everything they had in the first place. If they're going to sacrifice some grain, it was because God had given them grain. If they're going to sacrifice an animal, it was because God had given them animals. And it was a reminder to them every time that they don't serve a God who takes from them. They serve a God who provides for them. And that makes all the difference. I want to bring Tim up on stage right now. So Tim is one of our just recently graduated high school students, and so he's going to set off onto an adventure into college a little bit. And the high school students, up until this point, have been talking a lot about transitions and unknown futures and how you go in to sort of unknown futures. And so Tim got to share some even with the other high school students, and along the way you got to talk a little bit about God's provision too. So Tim, would you tell us just a little bit about who you are and some ways that God is offering provision in your life?
Yeah, so like Chris said, my name is Tim Summers, and I'm a graduating senior from Yorba Linda High School. I've been at Rose Drive for the last 15 years. I went to school here for 12 years. My whole life, I've been in one place, and it's been very stable, and I'm very grateful for that. But similar to Abraham, I'm about to embark on my own journey of faith. Exactly 2 months from today, I'm getting on a plane and moving to Michigan to study political economy with a pre-law emphasis at Hillsdale College. This is going to be quite a transition for me, and although I'm excited, I'm also very nervous. And just like Abraham, I'm not sure how it's going to be, but I know that I'm going to trust God that He will provide for me. So I've been studying God's Word and looking for sort of some points that will help me as I undergo this transition, and I'm here to share those with you today. And these transitions, these times of struggling, these times where we need to embark on a journey of faith, they don't just apply to someone graduating high school, going into college. They apply to any stage of life. We are all going through certain things. We are all facing these struggles. And so these points that I give you aren't just going to apply to me. They'll apply to you all as well. So the first thing that God's going to provide and that we have to look for is community. Galatians 6:2 says, "Carry each other's burdens, and in this way, you will fulfill the law of Christ." So when I see this, I see we have to find a community of people with like-minded views to ours that will help us become better, and we can help them become better. Here at RDF, I joined a rooted group almost 6 months ago, and that group was my community. And from that, I have relationships that I will always remember that have forever impacted me. When I go to college, I will maintain my community here long distance ways, and I'll also find a new community, a new church. And I know that this is necessary because I need that group of people around me to support me. But also when we're talking about communities for people who are embarking on journeys of faith, there's people that aren't necessarily struggling at the time, and those people have a role to play as well. Those people need to be the community for those that are struggling. They can pray for each other, they can help them, they can share similar experiences to give them hope, and this is necessary if you aren't facing those struggles, or even if you are, we can all help each other. So the next point is that we need to look forward to the future while we're facing these times of transition. Romans 8:18 says, "I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that God will be revealed in us." So as I'm anticipating traveling up to college, as I'm anticipating leaving my family, leaving my friends, leaving the people close to me, and facing winters in Michigan instead of here.
Oh man, that sounds as bad as going to outer space right now. I don't know.
All I can really do is look forward to once I get used to it, once I'm settled in, I know that I'll thrive there, and I know that I'll eventually reach summers in California again. But
we're always here for you for that, Tim. We will always have the summers for you.
But yeah, for real, when we're facing these times of transition, when we're struggling, I think that we can trust God to look to what's to come. Because when we reach a year from now, 10 years from now, we'll realize what God's purpose was in having us face these times that we were struggling, these times that we were transitioning. It'll all become clear, and we'll think to ourselves, oh, I see why that happened. I see that that was part of God's plan. And that's what I'm looking to do. Even though I'm sort of nervous for college, I trust that, you know, it's part of the plan. So one more thing about that is recently I've started thinking like towards college, and I'm like thinking like, oh shoot, what if like the worst possible scenario happens? And a lot of times when you're in struggling situations, you think, oh no, this will happen. But I was thinking about it and I was praying with God, and He told me that instead of thinking about the worst possible scenario, why don't we think about the best one? And that's what I'm gonna be doing when I face college, and that's what you guys can face as well when you're struggling with certain things. So
you gotta clap out there for that one. Yeah, they like that.
The final point that I have is we need to trust that God will take care of us when we're struggling. So Deuteronomy 32, 10 through 12 says, "In a desert land he found him. In a barren and howling waste he shielded him and cared for him. He guarded him as the apple of his eye. Like an eagle that stirs up its nest and hovers over its young, that spreads its wings to catch them and carries them aloft, the Lord alone led him. No foreign God was with him." So when I see this verse, I think of a few different things. The first is, no matter where you are, God will find you and he will take care of you. He will provide. Just like he provided for Abraham when he told Abraham to sacrifice his son, God will provide for you guys whatever you face. So for me, that's college. For other people, they could be struggling with other things. People struggle with addiction or loss of loved ones, or if you're struggling financially, everything that you're facing, God will take you and he will stretch out his wings and protect you. He will help you along the way. And when it becomes time for you to go off on your own, he will still be above you watching, but he will enable you to do so. So these are sort of the points that I came up with when I was trying to figure out, what should I do? Like, why am I worrying about college, you know? And I thought that it was appropriate to share these with you guys because everybody's facing their own Abraham's faith journey. So that's what I have to say.
Thank you, Tim. Give Tim a round of applause. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Yeah. I wanted Tim to share that for two reasons. One is that it's just fun to see what our students are up to and the way that God's at work in our students. I'm absolutely loving that. We've been seeing that all this morning. But the other is that Tim was able to speak to some of the concrete aspects of this, right? When we say that God is a God who provides, we don't necessarily just mean that in the abstract. There are concrete ways that God provides for his people. He provides community. He provides hope for the best possible future. He provides everything that is needed along the way. Now, it is true that we don't always have the same definition of provision. Sometimes we ask for God for things that aren't part of God's plan, that aren't part of the way he intends to provide. The God who will see to it has a different detail in mind for how to get to the end. But what we do know is that we have a God who works for us rather than a God who is trying to take from us. And that is why each of us can find ourselves on a journey like Abraham's, going forth into the unknown and trusting in Jehovah Jireh, the God who provides. Now, here's the reason why I think Abraham's story is so significant to us. It establishes that God is a God who provides. And we can see the concrete ways that he shows up in our lives and the ways that Tim talked about. But the other thing about that story is if you take the whole narrative arc of the Bible, just the whole thing, from start to finish, there's really two big high points in the narrative. I think that the binding of Isaac is one of them. This idea of who is this God? Is he a God who is for us or a God who's going to take from us? When we get to the binding of Isaac story, and we call it the binding of Isaac because he wasn't sacrificed, he was only bound. So we can't call it the sacrifice of Isaac. When we get to the binding of Isaac, we see that God is working for his people. And then you've got the whole rest of the history of Israel, but then you get to the Gospels, and there's this other high point in the narrative. And this one also involves a son, but a different son. In Genesis chapter 22, verse 14, it says, "So Abraham called that place, 'The Lord will provide.' And to this day it is said, 'On the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided.'" On the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. There was a time when Isaac, a son, had to climb a mountain, carrying the very wood that would be used as an altar so that Isaac could be sacrificed. Many years later, a different son would climb a different hill. This hill wouldn't be called "The Lord will provide." This hill would be called Golgotha, which roughly means skull. This son would also carry up this hill wood that would be used as an altar on which he was to be sacrificed. The son would also be bound to the altar, not by ropes, but with nails. But this son would have no ram to rescue him, because this son was God's. And the God who provides was not going to even withhold from us his own son whom he loved. Because God's love is that powerful. That overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God prompts him to give all he has for us. This is not a God who lives off requiring things of his creation. This is a God who provides even that which costs him the most. And as his people all these years later, we look to God's provision on the cross. And we come together in worship. We make the sacrifice of praise because we know that God paid the cost for us that we could not pay to conquer sin and death once and for all. And so we can trust that God is going to be with us in every step of our lives. And we see this in Romans chapter 8, verse 32. It says, "He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things?" If Jehovah Jireh, a God who provides, wouldn't withhold even his own son, will he not be with us in every other step of the journey? I know it doesn't always look the way that we want it to look. I know that our plan for God's provision and God's plan for his provision are not always the same. But what I'm confident in is that God's plan for provision is better than mine anyway. And that the details that he sees to fulfill the promises he's enacted in each one of our lives, now and for eternity, they're the good ones. And while I may not know what's going to happen next in my life, and many of us who are facing uncertain seasons of either transitions or something else that we don't understand, we may not know what God's going to do next, we can come back to this name that God is Jehovah Jireh. At a root level, he is the God who provides. So I'm going to invite the worship team to come back up. I want us to be honest with God. Because many of us know that there are things on the table where we don't see the provision. We don't see the way out. We don't see the details for how God is going to get us through these things. And it's honestly better if we just say that out loud to God. To recognize the things that are causing us difficulties. To put it before him and say, "God, I don't understand my current situation. I don't understand my reality." But then to go back and say, "But you are Jehovah Jireh, the God who provides. And now and always, I will put my trust in you." God, as we go from this place, help us to have an increased trust that you are a God who provides for us. You're not a God who wants to take. You're a God who wants to give all the good gifts to those who love you because you loved us first. Even when we didn't deserve it, you would not withhold even your son from us. So God, it's that love that you've shown us that sustains us and causes us to want to say, you are the God that we will trust in now and forever. Amen.